Hey guys, welcome back to Small Talk with Sid, the podcast with your host, Sydney Matome. And we are now entering the month of March, and I love the beginning of a new month. It's a chance for a clean slate and just new opportunities. With that said, I have a lot of life changes happening right now. So quick life update. My family is in the process of selling our family home. This is my childhood home, and there's just a lot of moving parts right now, no pun intended. I've been running around nonstop looking for a place to live for the next year. I also have plans to move to a new city at the end of the year, but for right now, I'm staying in Long Island for the moment and just kind of like helping sort everything out. So it's been really crazy. But, you know, funny enough, this episode is actually about real estate, and I'm just tying the two together because it just fits very perfectly with this episode. But moving can be scary but exciting, and real estate's actually fun. I'm learning, like, so much through this process. And with that said, I also know a lot of my listeners are newly engaged or in that process of, you know, maybe wanting to invest and looking for a first home. So we offer a lot of great advice in this episode. I'm so excited to introduce you to our guest. So with that, let's meet her. So in this week's episode, I'm chatting with real estate agent and cast member on both Netflix's Million Dollar Beach House and Selling the Hamptons on Discovery Plus, Peggy Zabakalis. Peggy's real estate career began back when she was on Ryan Serhant's first team on Bravo's Million Dollar Listing. Now, about a decade later, she has made quite a name for herself in the world of New York luxury real estate. We talk about how she grew her own team, key tips on expanding her network, being a woman in real estate, and even advice for first-time home buyers. This episode has a little something for everyone, so I suggest you tune in. Now, let's meet Peggy. Hey guys, I am here with the stunning, talented Peggy now, and we were just talking about how New York is disgustingly cold, but hi Peggy, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. How's your day going so far?
It's cold. New York is cold, but it's good. I've been up since 4.
Yeah.
So the third episode premiered today, so.
Amazing.
First to watch it.
Yeah, how's just the start of 2022 going for you? Busy, you know, not so busy. What are your thoughts?
Busy. I always try to stay as busy as possible. Real estate for me is a game changer because I am expanding and growing. So I have a team in the Hamptons, obviously my team in New York City, and I connected the two. So now I do Long Island as well. So I'm a busy little bee.
Yeah. And it's a crazy market right now. The housing market right now. It's wild.
Crazy. Fortunately, it's great when it's crazy because that means that we're super busy. So I'll keep going with it.
Sure. We're going to touch on that a bit later, but let's first go into, like, with every guest, we always do background to talk about where you grew up, where you went to school, what'd you study, all that.
Yeah. So I was born in Astoria, Queens, but I grew up on Long Island in Commack and went to undergrad at Hofstra. So Long Island proud, right? And went to law school at Toro, and then also studied law in a real estate, in a international transaction way, and studied in London and Paris for a bit.
Okay. And then what made you want to go to law school? Like, what was the purpose behind that? Did you want to be a lawyer?
My mom wanted a doctor and an attorney in the family.
Yeah.
And brother got the doctor and my loud mouth got the attorney slot. So that's pretty much what made me go to law school.
Is that what did you have? Did you have an idea of what you wanted to do? Or you kind of just like, I'll do this for now?
I think it was always just engraved in my head that I had the loud mouth, and not like a loud mouth, but I always want to prove a point and or like, if someone's right, I want them to be validated.
Yeah.
So that was kind of always my plan.
Yeah. Okay. So you go to law school, you graduate. Where are you after you graduate? Like, where are you at your career? Like, do you immediately go into like the world of real estate, or are you like kind of playing around with different, you know, career paths?
Well, I always had a passion for real estate. My best friend at the time when we were 19 years old, her mother transitioned and got her real estate license. That opened my eyes a bit. So I had my real estate license since I was 19, 20, but I didn't really use it. My last year of law school, I was offered a position to start a new team with Ryan Serhant, which I'm sure you guys all know. I was one of the original 4 members. And I figured this is a great opportunity to pursue something that I really am passionate about. I'm going to do it. And if it fails, I could be an attorney as plan B, but I don't like to fail. So.
So you were on his team prior to the show coming about Million Dollar Listing?
My first day working for the team was the premiere of season one. So he filmed season one already. It takes a while for production, especially back then when real estate reality TV was so new.
Yeah. So what was it like working with him and his team? Like, cause that was like your first real experience in like that world of like luxury real estate. So like, do you remember like what you learned during that time?
Yeah, absolutely. So we were all pretty new in the industry. So we all worked together to learn how things are done. We made mistakes. We made great accomplishments. We learned great traits. We learned what didn't work. So all together, we kind of implemented new ways of doing real estate and all, like, yeah, as a group. We were all so new, including Ryan, that we pioneered the new training section, like training that I now do to my team and things like that.
No, I mean, that's like, if that's like one of your first experiences to be part of like such a growing team that was expanding that quickly, I'm sure you learned like so much. Do you remember like a piece of advice that Ryan gave you along the way or something that, or maybe an experience that you just remember that like really you take with you till this day?
So this was 10 years ago. And yeah, when Ryan and I started working together, we were both brand new pretty much in the industry. He was maybe a few, like one or two more years into it than I was at the time. So we really just learned together and learned how to navigate the real estate world together. Fortunately, that show and the publicity of it gave us the opportunity to have exclusivity of amazing homes in New York City, which definitely helped and elevate all of our careers as a group. But I wouldn't necessarily say like an advice per se. I think the biggest thing I took out of it was my first team that I was on, and I learned what worked and also what didn't work. So in my future, like currently what I do now, I fix what didn't work for me then, and hopefully I just do better.
Yeah. What's something that like most people don't know about like luxury real estate, or something that like maybe you learned throughout your journey that like you thought prior that wasn't true or was true?
It's all the same thing, whether you are trying to sell $100,000 home or $100 million home. You know, the fundamentals of sales and the fundamentals of real estate is all the same. It's just a much different price point, but yeah, the fundamentals are all, the ABCs are there.
Yeah. Cause at the end of the day, it really is like human behavior and knowing how to like sell to people and the psychology of all of that. So that makes sense that like that translates no matter like the price point. Obviously I'm sure, you know, there's like little things that are different, but at the end of the day, like as long as you have that as your foundation, like, you know, cause I think a lot of young people now are like wanting to become real estate agents. And I think sometimes they always want to go for like the luxury side of things, but you got to get like the basis and like the, just like the regular stuff down pat before you start like, you know, wanting to tackle those like larger price points. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Yeah. I always say, and for the agents on my team, I would rather them make a mistake on a home that's less than $1 million as opposed to me giving them a $5 million plus client and then making those mistakes. So and the luxury market, really, it's everything that you see at a lower price point, just elevated. You know, now you have, you know, indoor outdoor swimming pools, or you have these crazy penthouses that are on the 80th floor and you're dealing with just a bit more of assistance or executive assistance of people. And you have to kind of break it down that way. But I always tell everyone, if you have the fundamentals of any sales job, really, and you go back to the basics, you can succeed.
Yeah, for sure. And also touching a little bit back on like the law school stuff. So what you learned in law school, you apply a lot of it today because you were working with like all the work you were doing in law school applies to real estate. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I specifically knew I always had an interest in real estate. I just was a little afraid of making that transition. So that alone, like contracts and reading and all that fun stuff is great, but also being a female, and having ESQ after my name just gives me a bit more credibility. It's a great education. Being a young female when I first started gave me a bit more credibility. And I think a lot of my clients respected me at the point, especially when it came to reading some contracts and paperwork.
Yeah. And have you seen, like, what's been like the major differences you've seen being a woman in real estate? Like, do you feel you've had to work extra hard? Is the climate different now versus it was maybe like a decade ago? What has been like your experience like?
So I never really realized the boys versus the girls club, because my dad always told me there is none, and you just put your head down and you work hard and do what you can, and anything the boys can do, I'm going to teach you how to do it better. And he did, you know. But I definitely put young females under my wing a little bit, and I want to protect them. It is very much, there's a lot of females in the industry, but the top 20% or so are mostly men. And it's just, we're just breaking barriers and trying to be part of that group.
Yeah. I'm curious if you've ever had, I would assume this has happened, if not to you, then to someone else, where you've had like inappropriate times where maybe a client was hitting on you that you weren't interested, or like just a relationship that like was crossing the line. Have you ever had something like that? And how did you deal with it?
I think every female in any industry probably has had a situation where they felt a little uncomfortable. I try my hardest to really draw the line and not have it ever get to the point where I feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I tell girls that are work for girls that like just DM me even, and or just girls that work for Nest Seekers, if you ever feel uncomfortable and if there's a gut instinct, no amount of money is ever worth whatever it could possibly be, I just step away. Or in the beginning, I still have a really good friend. His name is Tall. I used to put him on the showing. So let's say I read the room a little bit and I was uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I would schedule the appointment, and then last minute I would say, oh, you know, my colleague Tall will meet you because I can't make it. And 9 out of 10 times the person would cancel. So
that yeah. Listen, growing up in like, you know, we're so close to New York, and especially cities like LA or Miami, those guys, typically it's men that have a lot of money, you know, and they see a young, beautiful girl that's selling them a home. Like they will definitely try to cross the line, or, hey, I'd love to take you out to dinner, or we should do something. And you're not interested. You're here to work. And I could definitely see that happening a lot. So I think knowing how to like navigate those, you know, awkward situations, I think that's like such a key in any business situation. But it could be challenging sometimes because you want to do your job, but also you don't want to lose the client, but you also have to make sure like you're very clear about like what that is. So,
yeah. And don't chase the deal. You know, a lot of times when you're so desperate for that deal to close or so desperate for that client, especially when you're brand new, most of those times it's a dead end. Like once you start chasing and you put your morals down and you're just off, you're off balance, that's when things go wrong. So just, it's not worth it.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. So Million Dollar Listing, you did that show. What year did you stop filming that?
I'm terrible with years.
This was a while ago.
Yeah, this was over 5 years ago.
Okay. So then when did the Million Dollar Beach House show, when did that come to pass?
Million Dollar Beach House aired in 2020. We filmed it in 2019. It aired summer of 2020.
Okay. And then that was something that, did you go to Netflix, or did Netflix come to you? Like, how did that come about?
No, the CEO of my company, Eddie Shapiro, came to me one day and said, hey, we're going to film a reality show in the Hamptons. I do work out there. Do you want to interview for it? So I did. I did a whole Skype interview with the producers. I bombed it. I'm going to be honest, like did not do a good job. I literally thought I was supposed to be a specific role, and I guess the producers saw right through it. They didn't.
You weren't being your authentic self.
No. And that's why I always say, be your authentic self. No one can fake that. And if that's not good for any of like anything or what you're trying to do, then it's not worth it. But so that was a no. And then a few months later, I was presented with the offer again. I guess something fell out. And then I interviewed again with a like F it mentality. I don't know if I'm allowed to curse on here.
Yeah, no, you can.
Okay. Like a fuck it mentality. Like I'm going to be who I am and say how I feel. And they liked it. And that was the beginning of Million Dollar Beach House.
Okay. And no, that's awesome. And so that's still going on now. And then correct?
No, well, there's a new show now selling.
Right. Netflix. That's coming out on Discovery.
Yeah. It's already out.
It's out. So wait, so we're doing, so was it a trans, is it the same show, but a different, no, it's completely different.
Different show, different platform, different everything. We had to re-interview. Everything was totally different. So brand new.
Okay. What's like the major differences between selling in like the Hamptons versus like selling in Manhattan or Brooklyn? Like, what do you see based like the client differences or they're just real estate in general?
Well, on the real estate aspect of it, there's a huge difference. The fact that when you're selling a home, you have to do inspections. And that is a whole nother beast that I did not know or think about, making sure everything's up to code and the roof's not leaking in the boiler and the like electrical. It's just a whole nother world. In the city, it's just the building. It doesn't really matter. But I think also the other biggest difference too is that when you do sell in the Hamptons, there is a huge rental market. So one of the great, I guess, selling points also is that you can say, oh, you know, I know this house is $5 million, but I'll get you $300,000 for the summer. So let's say you just want to go to Europe for a month or two, you could rent it out. And that's a great return on your investment. As opposed to the city, you can't really get that much of a return on your investment as far as rentals go.
Right. Do you notice a difference in demands from clients when based on like the area you're in?
Like obviously like if they want like water, that do you mean like Hamptons or New York City or
what? I guess maybe a mixture of both. Like I think when I think about the clients out there, I'm thinking that there are certain like criteria that like they have to have. Whereas I think when you're in Manhattan, sometimes the client has to be a bit more flexible because there's not always availability about what they want. I guess just more on that.
Yeah. Closet space.
Yeah.
So, my closet space, which is funny. The closets in the Hamptons are always 10 times bigger than any New York City closet. However, I think when people look at the Hamptons, they want, you know, a house. They want a closet the size of a bedroom, a New York City apartment. But that's probably the biggest thing. And then obviously amenities, because a lot of the New Yorkers or New York City residents have or live in buildings that are full service, where they have a gym, they have a pool, they have a rooftop, you know, they have a rock climbing wall. So a lot of times they want that as well in the home.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, obviously you've grown a name for yourself and now, you know, you have a list of clientele, but how did you, like, what do you think really took you to like the next level? Were you able to like grow this list of clients and grow a team? How'd you like, you know, expand your business?
Every year as a real estate agent, you start with a zero salary. Every January 1st, no matter how much money I made the previous year, I start at zero. So every year I try to double my goal. I mean, at a certain point, you can't really double it.
Right.
Impressive. But I really just try to work as hard as I can. I'm up really early. I don't take no for an answer. And if there is a block, I try to figure out a way to maneuver it or get it. And I really just make it known to the world and the people around me what I do. You know, you have to market yourself as much as you possibly can to make sure everyone knows. And that's really what happened. And I'm not afraid to ask for help in the sense of, do you know anyone that's looking to buy and or sell? Or can you refer me to anyone or anything like that? It's okay to ask. And believe it or not, what I've learned is that people who are super successful that are maybe older than you want to help you. They want to also see younger generations succeed. And they also, so talk to them, ask them questions, learn how they got to the where they are. And that's something that I've always done and always will continue to do, which is also why I love mentoring other younger agents.
Yeah. When you're pitching yourself to a client, like, has there been any insider feedback you've gotten and why someone chose to work with you versus over someone else?
I think a lot of it is my perseverance. I tend to follow up a lot, right? So I will always follow up. And that's one thing that I engraved into every agent that I work with or works for me on the team. And I definitely don't give up. And sometimes I walk into people's houses and they have a stack of letters from me for like literally the past year. And they literally say to me, you've literally mailed me 10 times in the last year. I figured I might as well just give you a shot and see what you're all about.
Right. I just feel like when people are, it's a business transaction. And also people want to work with people that like they genuinely like get along with and they feel like a good vibe between. I mean, I there could be someone super talented and like all the numbers are there. And maybe in some cases you would work a person like that. But I feel like more times than not, you want someone that like you can call them and there's a friendship there in a way. And so I think that's like super healthy, no matter like what area, you know, you're in.
Absolutely. I always say whenever you're meeting someone, try to connect with them. You know, they're investing so much. You know, homes are usually everyone's prized possession. It's probably one of the biggest investments in their lives.
Right.
So they need to trust you. So whether it's, you know, you and I, when we first joined, you were like, oh, I'm on Long Island. Great. What part? You know, just find that automatic connection right away and then build from there, because that's all that really matters. And then they'll have a trust.
Yeah. How have you also like expanded your team and like choosing people who are going to be on your team? Were you very selective, or were there people that you knew previously? How did that work?
It's a learning process. Mm-hmm. I test them. I think I test everyone, where I don't necessarily answer or respond to their messages right away, because I want to see how badly they really want to work, or what their follow up, how they follow
up. Take notes, guys, take notes.
I'm spoiling my secrets. But everyone on my team is different, and I try to find people that want to work and are motivated, mm-hmm. and want to hustle, and that I have similar characteristics that just want to succeed.
Yeah. You have the same expectations of them that you do for your own self. And I think that's important. And you're also like setting like the bar for like what you want your workers to emulate. So that makes sense. What do you do to like, you know, for team building and bonding? Are you doing like outings, or like, how do you get them excited about, you know, like doing sales better than the previous year?
So COVID put a little bit of a stop to all of that. Mm. I think the biggest thing about being a team leader is that you're a leader and you have to listen. So not everyone operates, learns, and or excels the same way. I have some people on my team who love competing against each other and really boasting about their accomplishments. I have some people who are more like me and love succeeding, but are quiet on their accomplishments. Every year I ask everyone for their goal, their GCI goal, which is their gross commission income goal, and they have it. This year I individually told everyone, okay, if you reach your goal, you'll get like a gift from me. Mm-hmm. They talked amongst themselves, and everyone knows everyone's goal. So now I made it a competition where it's like, whoever reaches their goal first will get their gift. And we have weekly or bi-weekly meetings. I took them out to dinner for the holidays. We try to just do little things to make each other have fun and love what they do. That's all ultimately like what I really care about. I learned what I didn't like in previous teams, and I want to fix it and just see everyone succeed. That's my biggest kind of goal for everyone.
Yeah. What? How big is your team?
So I have, currently it's small. I believe in quality over quantity. It's sure. Only 5 people. Okay. There's 2 on Long Island, 2 in the city, and 1 that does both. And we're ever growing. There's talks about maybe a New Jersey and a Pennsylvania team. So I'm always looking to grow. I just want people that can represent the brand well and my name well, because that's all that really matters, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's an extension of everyone, and I want everyone to just have the same mentality.
Sure. So people also that are, you know, working towards being a real estate agent, or they already are one, the idea, how does it work with like, if you wanted to move and change cities, right? Like your whole business is here. So if you did want to go, let's say you wanted to like maybe move to LA, like, how does that work in your mind? Is that even like a possibility, or like you kind of have to like stay put?
It's definitely a possibility. It's just harder. Because your network is where you live, you know, all your contacts, all your connections is your immediate circle, but it's not impossible. You made it in one city, and if you could make it in New York City, you could really make it anywhere. And that's, right. That's a cheesy saying, but
no, it's true. For a reason. So yeah.
Yeah. First and foremost, you have to make sure that you're licensed in the other city. So if you are in New York City or a New York State broker, you could only practice in New York. So if you want to go to California, you have to pass their real estate test. So that is the most important thing first. And then just really start from the bottom, in the sense of getting your contacts. But if you've already succeeded, you should bypass the first like 2 years of not knowing anyone like you did in the beginning when you first started in New York.
Right. And also I could imagine too, like being the fact that like you are, you know, you're a celebrity in the sense where you're on all these reality shows. Does that help you, or does it sometimes work against you?
A little bit of both. And mm-hmm. That's totally fine, because not everyone's going to love you, you know, and that's fine. I will gravitate more towards the people that want to work with me than the people that don't want to work with me. But that's everyone, whether I'm a celebrity or not, people are going to love or hate me. So you just want to lean towards the one that like me.
Yeah. But I definitely feel like in your particular industry, like you're in your business, you're always trying to like grow on social because that's how you get your name out there. It's really about how many people know your name and know about you. So like putting yourself on this platform, I'm sure, and you already said it earlier, like it helps your business overall. So I think you got to just kind of like take the bad with the good, but I think there's so much good that comes out of this, you know, for what you're doing.
Absolutely. The reason why I did this is because I wanted to build a brand and use this platform to make my name and a future team and a legacy well known, you know. And that's at my expense, but it's fine. Like I want to build a legacy and that's all that really matters. And if it helps also my clients, you know, if I have listings and or sellers that now I can expand and really just like branch out to other people, like networks and promote their listing on other, like in other countries. Now I have all these eyes at me, which ultimately just helps the client, which makes them happy, which then makes me happy. So it's a win-win.
No, I love that you said that. Cause I think like growing, you can't be afraid to like, you know, put yourself out there if you really want to build something. I think a lot of people have that fear, like whether it's the tiniest things, like they're afraid to like sing on YouTube or doing something big, like you, like going on a show. There's gotta be a little bit of like, you know, you gotta have that grit to you. But it's funny. I was actually reading the other day, cause I watched a Housewives of Orange County, and I did not know that Dr. Dubrow is literally the third richest plastic surgeon in the world. And I was like,
in the world.
Like, I was like literally mind blown. I mean, if you look at their house on the show, it's like a 20,000 square foot house. And I mean, the things that they say, like so casual, I think they go to like Turks and Caicos like 10 times a year. It's like insanity. The kind of money they have is insanity. No. Do they have investments and other stuff? I'm sure they do. But also like, this is a guy that he had shows like literally for past like two decades and he built this brand. And I think a lot of his success, you know, comes from the fact that he was like, you know, putting himself out there and putting himself out on these platforms. And so, because he's attracted so many people from like all over the world. So yeah, there are a lot of benefits to putting yourself out there. And yeah, you do get a lot of criticism, but sometimes it's just that risk is worth it. So I totally get why you're doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
Yeah. So when it comes to, I'll talk about that after. So last thing I want to ask about, like just real estate is I think there's also a lot of young people now where they're purchasing homes and like, you know, new couples and everyone's like entering like that next phase of life. So when you're looking for a home, like what are some key advice and tips that you can give someone if they were like just, you know, on the market?
Don't become house poor necessarily. Mm. And don't wait for the right moment. If you financially can afford it without really stretching yourself out too thin, then that is the right time. Don't wait so much about the market or waiting for certain X, Y, and Z. If you are financially comfortable, I always say do it. Having an actual real property investment, in my personal opinion, is a smarter choice than necessarily going into crypto or NFTs now, which is a whole nother thing that I know nothing about. So don't even like ask because I'm
same,
so
same here. Same here. Wrong podcast for that. Yep.
Yeah. And you know, if you can't necessarily get what you want right away, that's okay. This is your first house. Your first house is not your forever home. So if you need to maybe move a little further away to an upcoming like neighborhood, that's fine. As long as it's upcoming, just make smart financial decisions in that way. Don't reach for the stars all at once. Build your portfolio, even if you have to start small, and don't worry about your friend or what they're doing. Do what you can do. And that will be much more important and much more successful in the long run.
Yeah. I think I've seen a lot of young people too, like do the whole like fixer upper situation where like they buy a house that is like completely needs a whole like remodeling. And then you end up making a profit later on. So yeah, maybe you're not going to like have like the Instagrammable house and it's not going to be like the vision you in picture, but I think you got to like, know that takes like a few steps to like get to that place. So don't put like that pressure on yourself right away. So yeah.
Yeah. I think a lot of us want it all right now. We want everything that we possibly dreamt of immediately. And that's not necessarily the case. Your first home is never your forever home. Your first home is your home that you sell. Maybe you make a profit. Hopefully you do. Your second home, maybe you could rent it out and then help build your equity in your portfolio. And your third home, maybe could be your forever home. So just, it's not the end all be all.
Yeah. And when you're working with clients and kind of like you're looking for homes for them, are there things that like you're kind of looking out for that like they, the house needs to have, or if the house doesn't have that, like that's an issue, or is it kind of like a case by case basis?
Some clients are case by case. Some clients absolutely need to have something. And if they don't have it, let's say they don't have a pool, I'll find them something that we can put a pool in and still be in the budget. But what I do always tell every single client, and this could also answer to new home buyers, if you make a list, let's say you have a list of 10 things that you want and need, and or need, if there's 70% of the things that you need on the list and or like, look at the house again. You know, make a list between wants and needs and see what, if the house has more of the needs or more of the wants, and then take it from there. Does that make sense? I think I explained
that a little. Yeah. Yeah. I guess I'm also talking about like maybe like the actual deal itself too. You know, when it comes to like the financial aspect, are there things that it's like, listen, I would stay away from that, or like, or yes, that's a great deal. Like, are there things when you're, you know, cause I feel like there are a lot of houses that they seem like they're awesome, and then you actually look at the deal itself and the structure and you're like, you know what, this is probably not the best way to go.
So a lot of it has to do with the inspection for homes, right? On not for apartments. A lot of times when the inspection comes back, and if there's a lot of issues with it, I will never make the decision for the client because I never want them to regret it and then have them blame me. So I'll never tell them, yes, you have to go this way, or no, don't go this way, because that's not my place. I can advise them and I can show them all the facts, and then they can make the decision. And if they can't make the decision, let's say there's construction issues, I will, you know, introduce them to some construction people, or I'll make sure that their attorney is a great attorney that can look into the building minutes, let's say, or some more of the intricate details of it, that they can be more educated in the decision.
Yeah, for sure. Now let's talk a little bit about you, Peggy. So you're a busy woman doing the most in the best way possible. So how are you, like, well, what's your personal life look like? Are we dating right now? Are we single? What's that?
We are dating.
Okay. We are. Okay. Dating.
We're off the market.
Yeah. Best way you could phrase that. So how does that work? Are you attracted to a certain kind of guy where they have to be exactly like you, or maybe they're a little bit more laid back? Like, what's your type?
Someone that can handle me.
Yeah. 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 Well put.
I always want someone that's smarter than me and or more like has more of a hustle and really can push and motivate me to be a better version of me. I want a partner in crime. I want someone where we could build empire together. And that is hard to find because a lot of men are intimidated by successful women. Mm. So it takes a strong, confident man to really be okay with that.
Yeah. Has there been times like what has been your experience like in the dating pool? Like, are the guys just, I don't know, like, why has it not worked out? I guess is a better way to put it.
I haven't really found someone until now that really can motivate me. And this is going to sound terrible, and I can't believe I'm saying this, so I'm so sorry for all my exes, that I can really truly like respect. Mm. A lot of times I would date guys that we're great, amazing men. But I wanted more of like someone with more determination and more just like hunger in them.
Yeah.
And that's hard. And also in New York City, dating is so hard. Like, all the guys think their shit doesn't stink.
Right.
And they're like, I'm in finance and I'm blah, blah, blah. Okay. And yeah, I make my own money. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah. So yeah, you're in New York. Everybody else does that around you. So there's nothing that, and I think that's kind of what, if you don't have that respect, like the money and all that doesn't matter. You could be dating a guy that's a multi-billionaire, and if you can't respect him, I mean, listen, I think there are women that will kind of do that trade-off. But to me, like you said, you want that like partner in crime and you want to like grow with someone. I know for me, I never want to ever feel like someone has like control over me or like power over me. I want to be like equal with someone. So.
Absolutely. And like a lot of men are threatened, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of men are just in general, I think all over, they see a successful woman, or they just see, even if you're not successful yet, they just see a hard worker and they're just threatened. So I always, listen, I'm 35. I didn't give up. I waited for the one I wanted.
Yeah.
Just wait. It'll happen.
So you're in a relationship now. This is like, how long have you guys been dating now?
About 3 years.
Okay. Oh, much longer than I thought. I didn't know that. Okay. So are we talking about next steps, or we're not sure yet?
We're definitely talking about next steps.
Okay.
I mean, that's just the progression of a relationship. It's just a matter of when, you know, we're both super successful and super busy with our own industries that it's just a matter of time.
Yeah. And I'm glad you found someone that like you can respect and grow with. I mean, that's what you've been looking for. And ladies, don't settle. Don't settle.
Know your worth. Do not settle. I promise you'd rather be in a relationship where you feel equal and you don't sacrifice any of your wants.
Always.
When you buy a house, you can sacrifice some of your wants to make that better. You could add that on. I promise you, when you find a man, don't sacrifice your wants and needs.
I love all these tiebacks to real estate. So good. But no, yeah, I always say too, like, I would hate to, you know, be in bed with someone where I feel more alone when they're there than when they're not there. And so, you know, it's a sucky feeling. And so, you know, I'd rather just like focus on me. And I really believe when you're like in your lane and you're doing your thing, naturally, whatever is meant to be in your life will come. So I'm such a believer of that. Yeah.
Surround yourself with the people that you want to be with, like the people that you want to be with and who you want to be, and it'll all come to manifestation.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So, you know, personal life also, like, how are you, what do you do to take time for yourself just away from work and everything?
It's a good question. I think it's a learning curve that I haven't mastered yet. When I first started real estate, I was working 24/7, which also could be one of the reasons why I was more single. I was single then.
Sure.
Now that I've gotten older, I've learned to manage my time a bit better. And I've also built a team that I have trained personally to be the way that I would want any of my clients to be around. So I don't micromanage as much anymore. I've learned to just kind of let things go. So the team definitely helps give me some more time and freedom, but you also just make choices. And, you know, I've learned and I'm learning the balance of work life, but I don't really think anyone can master that fully.
Yeah. Are you doing workout classes or like, how are you just kind of like letting some steam off?
Yeah. So I have not been to the gym in like 2 weeks, but
same.
Usually try to go to the gym. I wake up in the morning and at minimum, I do at least 10 minutes of yoga. I try to do 20 on just an app that I just love just to kind of decompress. Mm-hmm. And then I really just like to spend time with my family and friends whenever I can. Although I'm surrounded by luxury and glamour all day, every day, but honestly, I love just being on my couch and hanging out with my friends in like leggings and a t-shirt or jeans and a t-shirt. And just like having your chill personal time. Believe it or not, I'm a pretty private introvert. So that's probably how I decompress.
No, I'm the same way. I feel like to the world, I come across like I'm an extrovert, but like internally, I'm still like a homebody and I'd rather just like do my own thing with my friends. I think the older you get to, you really value like that quality time. You care less about, I mean, I know like me, like who I am now versus like 5 years ago, I cared all, going out all the time and whatever, maybe partly that has to do with COVID, but I just learned to appreciate like the kind of like the slower pace a little bit. Just kind of like enjoying the relationships that I have. And, you know, right now I'm like staying with my parents right now. And I'm like, listen, I don't know what time in my life I'll ever get to do this ever again. So just kind of like wherever you're at, like kind of appreciate the moments you're in because it's not going to last forever. So whatever season you're in, just soak it up, I guess.
Oh, I love that. Whatever season you're in. I love that.
Yeah. What are your, okay. So I know you're crazy busy, but are you planning, are there any trips you want to go on this year? I know I read a little bit that you like going to Greece because you are Greek. So what places do you have in mind?
Well, I just got back from, where did I come back from? Oh, the Bahamas. Nice. My birthday took me to the Bahamas for my birthday. We're planning a trip to, I was in Mexico. We're planning a trip in Mexico, I think in a week or two to go. Anytime I can travel, I try to take away. It's also a good way that we can decompress. I really try to just rely on my team when I'm away and check my phone in the morning, in the afternoon, and at night, just if there's any emergencies. So that is probably my favorite thing. Water to me, boating and water is my favorite. It's my happy place.
Yeah, absolutely. And also do I like to do this thing where like, I always have something in my calendar to look forward to. Like I just made a dinner reservation with my friend and I for like, you know, in a few weeks. So doing something where like, you can kind of like, okay, maybe this day is super stressful, but I have like that to look forward to like next week. So having things like that, I feel like are also good when like you live such a crazy busy life.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And then just to wrap up, like, what are some personal and professional goals you have for yourself in the next, like, I don't know, like 2 to 3 years?
Personal, I would love to start a family and just settle down in that sense. Mm-hmm. And then professionally, just honestly expand even more. I would love to just build a really solid team of just amazing brokers that I already have and just expand. So I've expanded to Long Island, maybe Pennsylvania, maybe New Jersey soon. And that's probably it. And then see what other avenues happen. You know, I love mentoring people. So maybe do a training course or something along those lines. We'll see where the world takes me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm excited to watch your journey. I'm definitely going to catch up on all the shows. But you are such a doll and I love talking to you and I've learned so much from this, but I'll let you know when I'm in the market. I'm almost sure I'm going to be moving at the end of the year. So I definitely will message you and ask for any recommendations. Yeah. But yeah, thanks so much for coming on and we will definitely stay in touch.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes. Thanks guys. Bye.
All right, guys, and that's it. Thanks so much for listening. And if you want to learn more about Peggy, all of her socials and all of her show links will be in the description of this episode so you can check her out. And with that said, please be sure to subscribe to be the first to hear about new episodes, rate and review and leave me 5 stars. It would mean the world and helps my growing podcast. And until then, I hope you guys have a great rest of your week, new month, new beginnings. Remember, small steps, one day at a time. I even have to remind myself of that sometimes. But I hope you guys have a great rest of your week and I will talk with you guys soon. Bye.